Well, you're lucky today. No projector. So no history. We're two sessions behind with that. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to get that caught up, but we will at some point. Because I think it's really important to see what has gone on. I know I was under a lot of misconceptions, and I can't speak for you, but I learned a lot by looking at the history and seeing. A lot of the times we just think, well, Rome was bad. Well, they were. Most governments are bad. Too much power concentrated in the hands of a few people. It's always going to be bad. I don't know of too many exceptions. Jesus was an exception, but probably the only one. The other thing you're lucky about is today we're only going to cover one chapter, which is good. And another thing is that I don't want to go through the questions like we usually do, like we have been doing. I go through the questions. We're going to go through the questions, but I'll be commentating on it, and then you are free and encouraged to jump in at any time and help me out. So we start, first of all, with just a little review of chapter 11. For one reason, a lot of commentators believe that chapter 12 should really start with verse 19, the last verse of chapter 11. Now remember, the elders were falling down and praising God and giving thanks. And from what we see here, this is kind of a flash forward to the judgment. We give thee thanks, O Lord, the Almighty, this is verse 17, who was, because you have taken the great power and did reign. And the nations were wroth, the nations were mad, angry. And thy wrath came, and the time of the dead to be judged, and the time to give their reward to thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, and to them that fear thy name, the small and the great, and to destroy those that destroy the earth. I found that to be kind of interesting. And I think that back then he was talking about those who were creating war and confusion on the earth and just destroying things in general. Today, I think it could apply to people that are actually destroying the earth. The earth is being destroyed. A good example would be the rainforest. My understanding is that a lot of them have been cut down to provide firewood because the people don't have firewood. These people could be provided with oil or whatever they need to produce heat. They don't need to be cutting down. No, I'm not going to get into that. There's all kinds of ecological things we could talk about as far as destroying the earth. And that's what hit me when I read that. But back then, I don't think it was an issue. I think we were talking more about the wars and things of that nature. Okay, then verse 19, let's imagine that this is the start of the next chapter. And there was opened the temple of God that was in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of the covenant, and there followed lightnings and voices and thunders and an earthquake and great hail. So this is the backdrop now. What a noise. It's noisy. Okay. And then all of a sudden, a great sign was seen in heaven. She had this under her feet were the sun and the moon. She was arrayed. It says she was arrayed with the sun and the moon under her feet. And upon her head a crown of 12 crowns. Go ahead.
First
Yeah, for sure. That is a difference because we are looking in heaven now, but we won't be for long. Things are going to come down to earth real quick, including Satan. So he's going to be down to earth real quick. And so basically what we're going to be talking about are things that are occurring on earth. And when we get into chapter 13 and the beast, that's earth too. Right. That's for sure. We need to realize that Satan is a spiritual being. We're going to talk about how some of his power was taken from him when he was cast down to the earth. Exactly what is he still a spiritual being, but on earth? I don't know. That the text doesn't tell us that. And we need to concentrate on what it does say, which we will. Number one, question one, relate this back, which we have done. John saw the sign in heaven. We brought that up. This is good. Okay. As far as the moon and the stars and Jacob and Rachel, I think this is a stretch, and I'm not going to emphasize it. It's there if you want it. Genesis 37. No, Genesis... Yeah, Genesis 37, 9 and 10. Look that up if you're interested in this, but I don't think that that her arrayment there is of that much significance, other than to glorify, to show how glorified she was. To me, that's what the sun and the moon and all this was talking about. Okay, in question two, the emphasis there is that we're talking about a woman representing a nation or a kingdom. And this was typical in the Old Testament. Now, who is the woman? That's going to be the big question. We're going to answer that, I hope. But recognize that... women have been used to represent. Look at Micah. That's one of the quotations I have here. Micah 4, verse 9. Now, why do you cry out loudly? Is there no king among you? Or has your counselor perished? That agony has gripped you like a woman in childbirth? Writhe and labor, give birth, daughter of Zion, like a woman in childbirth. For now you will go out of the city, dwell in the field, and go to Babylon. There you will be rescued. There the Lord will redeem you from the hand of your enemies. Pretty powerful stuff, isn't it? That's the shadow. This is the reality. So that was that happened. But it was a shadow of things to come. And what we're talking about now is the reality, things that will shortly come to pass. Go ahead.
Over in John 16, Jesus refers to his death and his resurrection in a similar fashion, that of a woman being in birth, momentary grief, pain, but then the joy of
birth. Okay. Be sure to speak up. If I can't hear you, they can't. Okay. Number three. Could the heads and the crowns refer action? There's no doubt that Satan tries to be all things to all people and, you know, big deal. Exalting himself. With the crowns and all of that stuff. So, yeah. But have we... Well, let's go ahead and read verse 3 here. And there was another sign in heaven. Okay, so John is seeing this. Now realize this wasn't necessarily happening now. This was a vision. And what he was seeing was happening because he was seeing it. But it was representing something else that would occur shortly to come to pass. So that distinction is important. I mean, we're real time as far as John is concerned, but we're not necessarily real time as far as all these events are concerned. They may be sometime in the future. So he sees this other sign, behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his head 7 diadems. So he's acting like he's a king. All right, we'll talk more about the dragon. Now, the dragon is Satan. That's what we said there. Verification of that will come in this chapter, verse 9. Still a vision in heaven. And what happens in verse 4? He smashes his tail around the dragon. This is what John saw now. The dragon smashing his tail around, and he knocks down a third of the stars. What are stars? What were their stars? Their stars were not movie stars, like our stars are. Kind of trivial. Our stars are movie stars. They had some athletic stars, too. Their stars were political kings and so forth. So the idea here is that Satan had this power while he was in heaven to knock down a third of them, to knock them out of their power, knock them out of their position. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? To be able to do that. As a matter of fact, it's almost ultimate power to be able to set up and determine who's going to be the king, who's going to be, and who's not. That's where the power is. It's not with the king. It's with the person who makes the king, who determines who is the king. I think that's important for us to realize when we see what's happening on our earth today. And we blame our politicians. And they're just puppets. They're not to be blamed. They're just doing what comes naturally. Okay, number 4, question 4. Verse 5, is there any alternative to that being Jesus? If there is, let me know. I mean, there's no alternative to that being Jesus. So the child then was Jesus. So the mother must be Mary, right? The woman must be Mary. Okay, the woman's Mary. But what does Mary represent? That's the important thing. What does Mary represent?
The church. The collective people of God, maybe not necessarily the church.
Okay, if we look at Luke 3:23, it's the genealogy of Mary. And we see in that genealogy, it starts with Adam, Enoch, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, Jesse, David. All the good people, right? Generally speaking, the nation of Israel. And of course, we need to take one step beyond that and say, okay, the spiritual nation of Israel. She just doesn't represent physical Israel. She represents the spiritual Israel that goes back to day one and will go forward to the end of time. That's a conclusion I'm drawing. It doesn't say that in here, does it? But I think you'll agree as we continue on here that has to be the case. All right. So that was the next question. Could the woman map to spiritual Israel who brought forth the glorified Christ? Remember that there were always faithful people in Israel. You know, when we talk about Israel being so bad and all, you know, we're so negative about them. We need to be positive about the remnant. There was always a remnant. There were always a few good people. Mary was one of them. Joseph was one. I mean, there were good people there in Israel. And that's what we're talking about here. Not the evil kings and all the bad things that were going on. All right, let me pull up Ephesians 6:12 for you. The very last question here in number 5, for verse 6. Could this be referring to a spiritual wilderness? It says that she fled into the wilderness. Well, Mary fled into a wilderness, didn't she? She fled into Egypt. Was that a wilderness? No, it was a very fertile place, wasn't it? It was a spiritual wilderness. God was not there. God was not in Egypt. They were not serving God. But they took care of Mary, didn't they? They took care of Jesus. God used them. That's an important lesson here in this whole chapter. God uses these powers. He's going to use Rome to take care of his people. You know, when we're down on them, we're saying they're bad. They're persecuting. They weren't always persecuting. Okay, let's look at Ephesians 6:12. For our wrestling is not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this darkness, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in spiritual realms. Paul says heavenly. Do some work on that. See what that means. I translate that, I interpret that spiritual realm. It's a different realm. He says it's not physical. Our wrestling is not against physical things. It's against spiritual things. Well, you got the physical realm of the earth and everything else, all the universe. And you've got the spiritual realm where there are two sides of that realm, right? There's the heavenly part of it where God is. We call that heaven. It's not a physical place, though, is it? It's a spiritual place. And then there's another one, the one Paul is talking about here, where you got spiritual hosts of wickedness in those realms. What would we call that? Hell. Okay. God's not there. God's not there. Mary fled, but not after the resurrection. We've already had the resurrection of Jesus. He's been called up to God's throne. So there's a breakdown. And if you try to map Mary to the rest of this chapter, it just totally breaks down. So we're not talking about the woman being, well, literally, maybe, at one time, Mary. But we're talking about a spiritual application that the woman is spiritual Israel, of which we now are part. And the ramifications of it, as we will see. We have a part of it. We have a part in it. Okay? Let's continue on systematically here, okay? Okay, she went and was protected in Egypt. Who did Paul appeal to for protection? Why would he appeal to Rome? I thought they were the ones that were persecuting everybody. What's that?
They were the governing authority.
Right, and they were had more justice, more of a sense of justice than God's people. God's people were jealous. They were overcome by their own sin and their own envy. And they couldn't think straight. So Paul appeals to Rome. And Rome takes care of Paul, at least temporarily. Now, ultimately, history tells us that Rome did Paul in, but let's not jump ahead that far. We don't need to deal with history. Let's continue where we are now here, protection of the believers. One reason that believers are protected is because we're basically to the world no count. We're not very big. We're not very influential. We don't get into politics. We don't get into military things. We don't kill people and do all kinds of things like the rest of the world does. Why bother with these people? And to a large extent, the church got away with a lot during when Jesus was on the earth, and shortly thereafter, right up until the death of Stephen, which was accomplished by the Jews, not the Romans. And then the Christians in Acts 8 were scattered abroad. God took care of them then too, didn't he? Could this be an allusion to that? It's God's people and they're being taken care of. Okay. Remember, we're not talking about a particular incident in history. In historical time, we're talking about concepts. We're talking about spiritual concepts. God took care of them. God will take care of us. God took care of them back then, over and over again. He'll take care of us now. That is what the book of Revelation is all about. It's to the persecuted. It's telling them, hang with it. We know these things are happening. These things are going to happen. Stay with it. Don't get upset. Don't lose your faith. Okay, so down to 7 then. 12:7, verse 6. There was a war in heaven. And to a large extent, what goes on earth is reflected in heaven. What goes on heaven is reflected on earth. What was the result of this war? Who won? It was between Michael and his angels and Satan and his angels. Demons. Who won? Why do they think today that they can win? They still do. They still think today that they can beat God. And they still fight against God just like they can overcome God and win. Nothing new about that, is there? We shouldn't be surprised when we see it and say, what is wrong with you? Do you think you can win in a war against God? Well,
from our viewpoint, a lot of times from the world, it's like, oh, the plan of God is not going to work. It's weak. But look who's victorious. The plan of God is victorious. The plan of Satan is defeated. But we see Satan as he's so strong and powerful, and he's not the start of this guy. His plan doesn't work. But it doesn't.
That's an excellent thought. It's the idea that things are not the way they seem to be, at least in most people. Right. But he doesn't want to believe that, does he? And a lot of people don't want to believe that either. They want to think that if we could just get Satan to take over this world, hey, everything would be solved. All of these constraints that we're under, all these laws of God, we don't want them. God allows him to do, and what God is allowing him to do is for the glorification of God, ultimately. It's ultimately for the glorification of God. They prevailed not, verse 8. They are the demons, his forces. Verse 9. And the great dragon was cast down. This is who the great dragon is, if you have any question about it. The old serpent who deceived Eve. He that is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. And he's still deceiving the whole world today, with very few exceptions. Most of them being right here, as far as Prattville is concerned. They're still all being deceived by Satan. He was cast down to the earth, and his angels were cast down with him. And I heard a great voice in heaven saying, now is come salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down. What's the implication there? The implication is that he had power that he was using out there, accusing us, accusing God's people. I'm not sure what that power is or the ramifications of all of that, but for some reason, they feel like it's a good thing that he's been cast down. The accuser of our brethren is cast down. Now remember, brethren is the subject here. Brethren is cast down. And they, verse 11, they, who's they? The brethren. The brethren overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb. Yeah, we know that. We can't do anything without the blood of Jesus. And because of the word of their testimony, because of what they were testifying, because of their evangelistic effort in the first century, hopefully now. Okay? And they loved not their life even unto death. And we said before, last week, how much the church prospered and multiplied when they were being killed, when they were being sacrificed. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Now listen to this. Woe for the earth and for the sea. And remember, the sea generally represents the masses. Because the devil is gone down unto you, having great wrath, knowing that he hath but a short time. That should be scary. We look around in the world today and we see all of this terrible evil. More and more of it's going to come out in the next few weeks, by the way. We see the terrible evils that are being done in this world. By this world. A lot of it's been kept secret and we didn't know about it. That's part of Satan's ploy. It's coming out. Everything will come out. Everything will be revealed. And we don't get overwhelmed when you say, well, how can we survive in a world that is so corrupt? Now, there's so much evil in this world. So much evil. Even the people that seem to be good don't have the right motives. They're not doing good for the right reasons. Okay, verse 13, when the dragon saw that he was cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. Now, it wasn't Mary now, is it? Persecuted Mary? No. So we see that there's something else that Mary represents or that this woman represents. And I think it's reasonable to say that it is the church, that it is God's people. It has been God's people since day one. So the dragon seems to be getting the upper hand. It would seem that way today too, wouldn't it? But God help. How did God help the woman? Gave her wings. Well, it'd be great to get wings, wouldn't it? Be like an eagle and fly around. Like these vultures, you see them all the time. Just floating around there. Two wings of a great eagle that she might fly to the wilderness. Now, see, there's that reference to the wilderness that was back in verse 6. The thought wasn't completed in verse 6, and now it's being detailed more. So, is it wrong for God's people to flee persecution, to get away from it, or should they just go and die? Well, now, there's a lot in Rome. There's a lot back then that just went and died, but there's nothing wrong. There's also those in Acts 8 that fled. Right? Is that what you were going to say?
Well, I was going to say a lot of them didn't have a choice. Now, they were led against it. Here she didn't have a choice. She fled.
Maybe she did have a choice. She could flee. She didn't have to hang there. Right.
So there was something there given
to her. Right. Is that given to us today? Maybe not physical wings. Flee the devil and he will leave you alone. I was trying to find that verse. Well, and if we're under persecution like they were, it may be, you know, we're confronted with either saying that the emperor is God or claiming to be Christians. Or perhaps we could flee before that happens. It gets to that point. But if it gets to that point, we've got to declare that we are Christians and take whatever the consequences are.
Yeah.
Yes, he would. He looked up into heaven and he saw Jesus. He saw that. Didn't bother him to get stoned, did it? May have hurt a little bit, but he knew it would be over pretty quickly. And he knew where he was going. Okay, verse 15. The serpent cast out of his mouth after the woman as a river, water as a river, that might cause her to be carried away by the stream. Well, let me just say, I don't see this as being literal. What is water? Water, very often, is the masses. And I can see that the dragon, out of his mouth, right, things that he's saying, stirring up the masses, They're against them, they're against her, they're against us. That would be a strong temptation for us to give in. But what happened? Verse 16. The earth helped the woman. Some of you may have seen where a stream of water will go down under the ground, and then it will come back out someplace else. Some of the commentators say that's what it's talking about. Well, that's figurative of what's happening here. But I think the earth here could represent temporal powers, and the fact that the temporal powers at times, not all the time, but sometimes, they protected Christians. And the first century would certainly be some of that, not all. We will get into where, in the time of Nero, things kind of came unglued, but prior to that, we see a general protection of the Christians. This is not talking about total protection. It's talking about temporary things. Okay. Verse 17, and the dragon waxed wroth, mad with the woman. I think we see some of that today in the Roman Empire where they, what are we going to do with these Christians? They just want to get killed. Killing them doesn't work. Matter of fact, you kill one of them, 10 more spring up. That really could make him mad, couldn't it? He went away to make war with her, the rest of her seed. This is a key here. This is a key to interpreting the whole thing. Beings reproduce after their seed, right? They do not reproduce other things. So if her seed was being persecuted, if her seed was the church, then what was she? It had to be the same kind. She's the same kind. So this kind of nails it down that you were right. You were right in that assumption there. Well, let's get wings of an eagle and fly. You ready? Let's go. Page 7. In the red book. Oh,
goes to a voice. I'm sorry,
song and not get emotional, you're dead. I appreciate all of your support and all of your help in this class.